BlogTalkRadio.com and SoFloRadio.com present The Nicole Sandler Show.
Truth to power, baby.
And now, here's Nicole.
Oh, boy. I'm having computer issues this morning, so bear with me. Welcome to a Wednesday. I'm Nicole Sandler here at RadioOrNot.com, SoFloRadio.com, TalkRadio1.com, or wherever and whenever you're listening. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for doing so. People in the chat room working on getting back in there. My Firefox just crashed on me. Not that that's a surprise. Well, mixed news today. First of all, condolences to Elizabeth Taylor and her family and friends. I can't say it was unexpected, Elizabeth Taylor dead. And interesting that it comes on the one-year anniversary of the signing of the Affordable Care Act. Now, you see, Elizabeth Taylor didn't need health insurance. I don't know if she had it. I know a fairly wealthy woman who takes pride in the fact that she doesn't have insurance because, well, I guess she doesn't need it. I don't know. Yes, 1 year ago today, President Obama signed into law the Affordable Care Act. That's, I guess, an oxymoron if I ever heard one, because health care is still not affordable, and we certainly don't have care. but here we are a year later, and do you know where your health care is? Because I certainly don't. I guess it's ironic that as I'm dealing with this tooth thing and the costs on a number of levels, one financially, two physically, there a year later, we're still searching, wishing we had health care in this country. And the problem is that most of the benefits of this law don't go into effect for another 3 years. Some of us can't wait 3 years. So we'll get into that a little later. I actually, ironically enough, I have to leave early today for a doctor's appointment. So in the last half hour of the show, what we're going to do is a flashback. No, not a drug-induced flashback, but a flashback to 1 year ago today. On the show, right after the big fucking deal was signed into law, I was still doing my show later in the day at that time, and then Congressman Alan Grayson joined me on the show to talk about the law that was passed, the Affordable Care Act, or as the Republicans like to call it, the job-killing health care bill. Sorry, I don't agree with either of those names. But we'll get to that. Also, interesting story to talk about on this, the day of the first anniversary of the signing of that bill into law. The day that Nancy Pelosi, by the way, if you don't follow her on Twitter, her Twitter handle these days is just at Nancy Pelosi. She will be tweeting. Wait, let me get this. Let me get this right. I don't want to misstate exactly what she's tweeting today. She will be tweeting. Okay, one benefit an hour. Hold on. Okay, a benefit every hour of the health care bill. See, there is one provision, a few provisions have already gone into effect, but one that could affect you and me, because honestly, I don't know anyone our age, anyone over 50, who doesn't have a so-called pre-existing condition. I think just being over 50 is a pre-existing condition, if you know what I mean. One of the early implemented provisions of the Affordable Care Act is the creation of a high-risk pool while we're waiting for the big national exchange to get up and running, which won't take effect till 2014, there is a high-risk pool that's gone into effect for people who have a pre-existing condition who can't get, you know, affordable insurance. Well, actually, the problem is you got to read the fine print. And in order to get into that high-risk pool, you have to be uninsured for 6 months. Some of us are, I guess, a little too responsible to be uninsured for 6 months. So you figure out a way to scrape together enough money to pay the extortion. Oh, I'm sorry, the premiums to pay for insurance. It is criminal, and yes, it is extortion. You gotta pay, or you're shit out of luck. All right. So anyway, we'll get to that a little later. But what I was getting at, in a little while, we're going to talk to a guy named Ed Blizzard, not to be confused with Eddie Izzard. This is Ed Blizzard, who is an attorney who's taking on a big pharmaceutical company over defective hip implants. Wait till you hear about this. It's going to piss you off. So that's coming up. Yesterday afternoon, you know, I'm listening to both sides sort of going after Dennis Kucinich. Congressman Kucinich, with whom I agree on just about everything, spoke out about the U.S. bombing Libya. Again, I feel really terribly for the people of Libya, but I also feel really terribly for the people of Bahrain and the people of Yemen and the people of Sudan and the people of Rwanda, and the people here at home, where we also have a horrible humanitarian crisis going on. So I got Congressman Kucinich on the phone, and we taped an interview, and we'll play that at the start of the second hour. So all that is coming up. Quick aside, I just noticed a question Mike M. wrote in the chat room about a tweet that came out yesterday. No, I'm not cutting back to 2 days a week. I do my show. My Ustream feed is, you know, on my Ustream channel. And when I'm not doing my show, I do offer it up for others to use. Kenny Pick does his Turn Up the Night show 2 nights a week. And when they log in, they are able to tweet, but it comes out under my name, so I have to tell them not to do that. So it looked like I was doing my show Tuesday and Fridays from 6 to 9 p.m. No, Kenny Pick does a show Tuesdays and Fridays from 6 to 9 right here on my Ustream channel. And beginning tonight, our friend Danielle, the Left Neck Chick, is going to do a new show on Wednesday nights from 7 to 9, I believe, called Left in Dixie, I think is what it's called. And she's going to start doing that this evening. So, yeah, the goal is to have, you know, some good shows that you can come here to my Ustream channel anytime and see something going on. So, no, this show remains the same Monday through Thursday, 10 to noon Eastern, right here, easily accessible through radioornot.com. By the way, though, next week, I'm going to be filling in for Randy Rhodes all week. Randy is moving her show back to Florida. Yeah. So while they're in transit and getting settled back down here, I'll be guest hosting next week. So I haven't yet figured out what's going to go on my show, but what I will likely do, just because I'm also in the midst of having to clean out my old house, it looks like all next week. That's right. Monday through Friday next week, I'm in for Randy Rhodes. What I will probably do is do my show Monday morning, my regular show here Monday morning, and then from Tuesday through Friday, sort of rebroadcast the show I did for Randy the day before, if that makes sense. So I'm not doing a double marathon each day. I'm also in the process. It looks like they have the bank has approved the short sale of my house. So I've got to get the stuff that's still in there out. So, yes, I've got a busy couple of weeks ahead. So anyway, that's the programming scoop. That's the little notes that I got to give you. But I want to start with WikiLeaks and Bradley Manning. You've heard me mention this a few times in recent days. There's sort of a war going on between two factions of liberals out there on Twitter, which is that, you know, I am appalled by what the conditions that we hear Bradley Manning is being kept in. And one of the best sources of this information is coming from The Nation magazine. Greg Mitchell, who blogs at The Nation, is he's been live blogging WikiLeaks. Today is day number 116, okay? And in the course of his regular work, he has also been able to write a couple of books. The new one, entitled Bradley Manning, Truth and Consequences, was released yesterday as an ebook. I will have a link to it later this afternoon from my show, from my blog at RadioOrNot.com. The ebook is out now. The print version will be out within about a week or so. Greg Mitchell sent me the ebook and last night, and I couldn't stop reading it. It is fascinating. So let's get Greg Mitchell on the line now. Greg Mitchell of The Nation. Hey, Greg, it's Nicole Sandler calling from Radio or Not. How are you doing today?
I'm very good. How are you today?
Great. Thank you. I was just explaining that you have been live blogging WikiLeaks. Today is now day number 116. You're doing that at The Nation. And in between, you've had time to write a couple of books on the topic. The newest one, Bradley Manning, Truth and Consequences, was released yesterday as an ebook. It's available via Amazon. I'll have a link from my blog at RadioOrNot.com after the show. And the print version will be out in a week or so.
Well, or maybe even later today.
Oh, wow. Sort of okay. Rushing, so. Oh, terrific. Well, I got to tell you, you sent me the ebook last night, and I'm already about over a third of the way through. It is, it's fascinating reading. It's one of those, you know, if it were a spy novel, if it were fiction, it would be, wow, you couldn't really make this stuff up. But the question, because the characters are so strange, you don't know what to believe and what not to believe. Now, I've been very critical of our government and the way they've handled this and the way they've vilified, first of all, Julian Assange, but also Bradley Manning, who, if I remember my civics classes from junior high school correctly, isn't everybody guaranteed a fair trial, like you're innocent until proven guilty?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think people are you know, this is sort of like pre-trial detention, you know. And, you know, the government and the military would argue that this is such a serious crime. It's very unusual, you know, high-level leaking of classified information that it's warranted in this case. And, you know, it's gone on forever now, 10 months. And, you know, the trial is nowhere in sight. It might be a few months off. So it's you know, unlike some of these cases where someone's detained or in the brig for 3 months or something, this is really at the far extent of this.
Well, so now the way that Bradley Manning was found out, the way that he was arrested and brought up on charges, was because he allegedly communicated via instant message and email from where he was stationed in Iraq to some kind of not very credible hacker guy named Adrian Lamo, who says Bradley Manning contacted him out of the blue after a profile appeared on him in Wired magazine, and Bradley Manning all of a sudden just spilled his guts to this virtual stranger about these high crimes that he's committed. It just sounds very implausible.
Well, you know, the whole basis of WikiLeaks was that the whistleblowers could leak to them without fear. And you know, what people sometimes forget is that WikiLeaks has been around over 4 years now. And during this time, Before this year, they were not really famous in the U.S., but they had had dozens of leaks, some of them, you know, fairly significant, where the leaker was never caught. And so one thing you can say about WikiLeaks is that they were pretty secure, or at least they lived up to their bargain in terms of protecting leakers. And so suddenly this year, a guy named Bradley Manning is arrested for this allegedly massive leak. And it really had nothing to do with WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks did not blow the whistle on him or anything else. He allegedly, as you said, out of the blue, contacted someone online and had 4 or 5 days of online chats, which the person he talked to, Adrian Lamo, who's a convicted hacker, kept and copied and turned over to the feds. I think on day two of the chats. So after day two, he was working with the feds and, of course, keeping records on everything and so forth, and turned these over. And Manning, after this 5-6 day period, was arrested immediately in Iraq and taken to Kuwait and then shipped back to Quantico, where he has languished in near solitary or maximum custody since the end of last July.
And now there are also, so is there any court date scheduled? I mean, there are a lot of charges against him. He has been charged with a crime, but are there any trial dates scheduled? Is he ever going to get his day in court?
Well, you know, it's very confusing even to me because this is military justice and there's court martials and, it's a whole different bag than in civilian court, which is confusing enough. So when I read, sometimes my eyes glaze over when I read various, statutes and so forth under which he will be tried, and there's article this and article that and so forth. So I can't say for sure. I know that his attorney says that as of now, it may start to move forward or grind forward starting in May and June. And how long this takes, no one knows, but I have a feeling that the best that can be hoped for Mr. Manning is that his conditions will be eased somewhat in prison, and if he has to stay there for many, many more months or years, that at least his conditions will not be, as has been charged, cruel and unusual punishment.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. Greg Mitchell is with us. You know Greg Mitchell from The Nation magazine, the man who has also been live blogging WikiLeaks. Today is day number 116, so you know the topic better than anyone else. And as you say, I mean, my eyes have glazed over a lot in trying to follow what's going on, and that's why your new book is so wonderful. Bradley Manning, Truth and Consequence, is available right now as an ebook, perhaps later today in the print edition, but certainly very soon. And I know you're on Twitter because I follow you at Greg Mitch. And so I'm sure you're seeing some of the same posts in this Twitter war that's going on. You got, on the one hand, Glenn Greenwald, who has also been on this story from the beginning and has been highly. He's a journalist and questioning a lot of the allegations made concerning Bradley Manning and how the arrest came to be and everything. So there's Glenn Greenwald and Jane Hampshire. And on the other hand, on the other side are some other people who are, I guess, well, they're Democrats. They claim to be liberals, but they're somehow defending the treatment of Bradley Manning, saying this man is not being tortured, is not being
right.
The conditions he's being held in are not cruel or unusual. Can you shine some light on what's actually going on with Bradley Manning?
Well, I'm not sure I have ever used the word torture, because I think that's a pretty extreme word, and I think it, in some ways it diminishes what we actually do we have done to a lot of other detainees in recent years. So I'm not sure by my own definition that it amounts to torture, but torture is a very, it's a controversial word. And there are people I respect who would say, kept in solitary conditions, what I think the military term is maximum, mm-hmm. where you're in your cell for 23 hours every single day. You're allowed out to walk around for an hour with shackles on. You have virtually no communication except maybe shouted out to a prisoner down the hall. And he's been, you know, supposedly harassed. And there was the whole episode for a week or so where he was forced to sleep nude because of a suicide threat or a false suicide threat. You know, he has pointed out, and his attorney has pointed out, that psychiatrists who have seen him in the brig for months have testified that he's not a suicide risk, and yet he continues under this watch so that there's a guard, you know, keeping an eye on him every 5 minutes. So, so some people would feel after 9 months of this, that constitutes torture. Others say it's, he committed a serious crime. He's in the brig. He's not totally isolated. And, you shouldn't use the word tortured. But I think, as we saw 2 weeks ago, sort of in some ways the climax of my book, you know, my book goes right up to this past weekend. Through the wonders of electronic publishing today, I was writing right up until Sunday. So the book really takes you up to Sunday. And, the climax in some ways was the firing of Hillary Clinton's State Department spokesman, P.J. Crowley, for daring to question the conditions under which Manning was kept. And that set off a week of editorials, finally, after 9 months, in every major newspaper, really, attacking the conditions under which Manning was kept. So finally, a week or two ago, we finally saw a national kind of discussion of this or debate on it in the mainstream, and a fairly prominent guy lost his job and so forth. So I think there's pretty wide acceptance that the conditions are unduly harsh. And, you know, you can say, you know, whether certain people have gone too far in certain charges, others have not gone far enough, but certainly there's an acceptance now. You even have conservatives who are saying, look, I hate this guy, or I think this guy's, a criminal, but, Jesus, we're really looking bad from treating them like he's at Gitmo or something.
Well, yeah, that's what it seems. Greg Mitchell is with us. You know Greg Mitchell from The Nation, of course. His new book is Bradley Manning, Truth and Consequences. And as you said, through the wonders of the being in the digital age, it is as current as a book can possibly be. And I'll tell you, I don't have a Kindle, but I do have an Android cell phone. I've got a Mac, and you can download the Kindle app for free and take the book with you. I was reading it on the computer last night. Ironically, today I have a doctor's appointment, and so I put it on my my phone, and I will continue reading the book on my phone. Technology, how amazing
is
that?
It's quite amazing, yeah. It works on all phones. It works on your PC. It's really your iPad.
Uh-huh.
It's really,
if you have an iPad.
So people use the term ebook now. It's no longer just like what think of as like a Kindle or
right.
a Nook or something.
You don't need that. You
everywhere.
Can yeah. take it on everything. And so you can get it right now at Amazon.com, and I'll have a link up on my blog. It is very fast reading, again, because this is if you even follow it in a cursory manner, you know this stuff is going on. I think the biggest question in the first third of the book, anyway, that's raised for me is the arrest was made almost immediately, and it seems like all the evidence that they have in the case against Bradley Manning is based on the chat logs, the mm-hmm. alleged chat logs, which were supplied by this guy, Adrian Lamo, who is a questionable
hacker, right?
Yes, at best. And if you can believe these chat logs, then Bradley Manning confessed to everything, and all right. the leaks, they're him going back to the collateral murder video, which, my God, I remember so clearly, and that hit the internet almost a year ago next week.
Right.
So
in the book I have, I the first time in print. Now, of course, it's not in print yet, but
right.
it will be. But even online, even in ebook form, I have the longest excerpts from the chat logs,
right.
page after page, and they make incredible reading.
Yes, they do.
And what I tried to do in this book, my previous book, The Age of WikiLeaks, I had the same motivation, which was to go back and sort of trace step by step, what has happened over the course of the past year, And the aim was to bring people who have maybe only recently gotten into this issue or maybe thought they knew something about this issue going back a few months ago, but really fills in how we got here. And so I did that again in my Age of WikiLeaks book, which concentrated on the WikiLeaks itself and the leak and Julian Assange's and so forth. And this book, the same thing. So it goes back to Manning's childhood, not too much, but a little bit of his, you know, his background, how he got to Iraq. And then mainly it goes step by step through the alleged leaks and his arrest and then all the leaks themselves, what some of the content of the leaks and the impact around the world. But then the last half of the book is mainly about his time in prison and the protests and allegations and so on and so forth. So, but as you said, the chat logs seem to be the main evidence. One suspects that perhaps the government, you know, seizing his computer and things like that may have a computer trail. It's not purely these printed out chat logs, but we don't know that. But in any case, supporters of Manning, we saw it again on Sunday, demonstrations all over the world. What they usually say is if he's innocent, it's an incredible injustice that he's being kept in prison and especially under these conditions and so forth. If he's guilty, he's a hero and what he did was heroic and he's a real whistleblower and he was out to save lives and raise discussion and so forth. And look what's happened. There's a lot of positive things that have happened from the leak. So I think even his strongest supporters in a way, you know, want to take two approaches, you know, that maybe he's innocent. But if he's guilty, you know, we still support him because he's a hero.
I hear you. And in fact, if you can believe the chat logs, what he said is the reason he did this is because in his position dealing with all as an information specialist, he came across all this stuff and he said it shouldn't be locked away in some log somewhere. This information belongs in the public domain. It should be free. It should be open. Everybody should have access to it. And I agree with him.
Right. Well, you know, that's again, there are people who say that they some of the information he's put out is valuable and it was good. Maybe other things not so much. And that's often the problem, of course, with whistleblowers. You disagree. Sometimes you agree with their impulse, but not what they've done. Now, in this case, as was said with WikiLeaks going back months ago, putting lives in danger is always the bugaboo. And yet, still, a year later, there's not been one documented person abroad who has been, killed because of WikiLeaks. We've heard it for a year, going back to collateral murder, that people are endangered and they're going to lose lives. And WikiLeaks and Bradley Manning have blood on their hands. But, you know, no blood has shown up yet. That's not to say that the releases have not caused a lot of uproar, you know. But you know, if you pay attention, and again, I think the value of all this is, and maybe this is more the value of my daily blog, but, you know, there are WikiLeaks uproars all over the world. I mean, India government is in a state of crisis due to a leak, you know, last week, cable about the vote buying of votes in their parliament.
Right.
A week before that, Indonesia was in crisis. Government nearly fell. And, of course, all we have to say is that the cables on Tunisia helped spark the rebellion there, which has led to everything else that's happened in that the region since December. So what Manning allegedly put out has been tremendously significant, and this of course draws more attention to him and who is this guy and hero or villain and how is he being treated and what's going to happen to him and so forth. So that's why I think that's why I thought he was worth a book on his own, because in a way he's been lost in all the coverage that Julian Assange has got.
Right, and the Julian Assange actually you cover in the Age of WikiLeaks, because he's a whole other chapter, he's a whole other book on his own, right?
That's for sure. Yeah.
I hear you. Greg Mitchell, again, great work. Today's day number 116, live blogging WikiLeaks at thenation.com. And the book, and I guess Sasha and Pooh are weighing in on it, too. They like it as well. Bradley Manning, Truth and Consequences. I'll have a link to to Amazon to buy it now. And as soon as it's available in the print form, I'll put that up as well. Greg Mitchell, thank you so much. I always enjoy talking with you. I really appreciate your time.
Anytime. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. I got to tell you, the book is one of those things you can't put down. All right. Let me take a break, get the dogs out of the room because they're barking, and we'll come back and find out, talk to Ed Izzard, Ed Blizzard. I've got Eddie Izzard on my brain. And find out about this lawsuit he's got. He is going up against Big Pharma. Good for him. Someone's got to do it. Right now, let's check in with Brad Friedman, the Green News Report.
Not out of the woods yet. The nuclear and humanitarian crisis continues in Japan. New nuke review for U.S. nuclear plants. Clean energy to the rescue. The surprising resilience of Japan's wind farms. Plus, surprise, a new 100-mile oil slick is spotted in the Gulf of Mexico.
Wow, another slow news week. All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And there's a growing body of evidence that radiation in excess of what the government's says are the minimum amount right. You should be exposed to, we're actually good for you.
Is that right, Ann Coulter? Hey, I've got an idea. Maybe you could head out to the Fukushima nuclear plant and lend a hand. It would be good for you and for us. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, as if there's not enough going on this week, we get word today as we go to air that a federal judge in California has temporarily put a hold on California's sweeping new global warming bill.
Yeah, he said that the state failed to adequately study the impacts of the proposed cap and trade system in the law. It was in the wake of that disaster. A handful of companies have resumed drilling on already existing leases in the Gulf of Mexico, but congressional Republicans say the new regulations are just too much.
Yes, it's been too much regulation that has led to all of our problems in this nation. Good Lord.
And this new drilling permit comes in the wake of reports over the weekend that the Coast Guard is investigating a new oil slick that was spotted in the Gulf of Mexico just 20 miles from the site of the BP oil disaster. New oil has washed up in outlying marshes in Louisiana. Coast Guard officials are still investigating the source of that 100-mile slick. And now on to Japan, where the toll of the dead and missing from the twin disasters on March 11th is now over 21,000. Officials say many people were apparently swept out to sea and may never be accounted for. We're not out of the woods yet on the nuclear crisis. Work on stabilizing the reactor units at the stricken Fukushima nuclear power plant continue in the ongoing crisis, with the crucial water pumps that cool the reactor units are now requiring repairs, a process that could take 2 or 3 days. Spraying of the reactor units with water cannons to keep the units cool has resumed. Now, once a reliable system of cooling is established, nuclear experts in the U.S. estimate it will take at least a week to stabilize those reactors.
As of airtime today, electricity has been restored to all 6 of those nuclear reactors from the grid. It's not necessarily doing a lot of good, however, until those pumping systems are fixed after they've been battered by the earthquake, the tsunami, and the ensuing explosions in many of those reactors.
So the world remains on edge as we keep our eyes on Fukushima and the radiation levels. We now have reports of radiation being found in raw milk, in leafy vegetables, and just as of last night, radiation in seawater around the plant, which could further hurt Japan's fishing industry, which already took a beating in the March 11th tsunami.
And we also want to stress that nuclear and health experts continue to insist that there is no risk of dangerous radiation reaching the United States. Reports in Japanese media indicate that Tokyo Electric Power Company, also known as TEPCO, the operator and owner of the Fukushima plant, may have worsened the situation by delaying taking drastic actions at the stricken plant in order to save it and protect its enormous investment. Recent very serious scandals revealing falsified inspection reports, cover-ups, and maintenance lapses at its nuclear facilities have earned TEPCO a bad reputation. The accident in Japan has understandably increased scrutiny of the 104 nuclear power plants in the United States. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission announced two new reviews of the U.S. fleet of nuclear plants, an immediate 90-day review providing a quick snapshot of the condition of our nuclear plants, and it will be conducted simultaneously with a second, longer-term safety and regulatory review. But a recent report from the Union of Concerned Scientists slams the NRC, documenting 14 near misses at U.S. nuclear facilities in just the past 2 years. Finally, Japan's wind farms came through the earthquake with no damage and have stepped up electricity generation after the automatic shutdown of all of the nation's reactors.
You mean there have been no threats of massive wind poisoning across the country?
Nope, nor any solar spills either.
Go figure. For more on that and the rest of today's green news that we couldn't get to today, please stop by our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you to continue telling the truth over your public airwaves. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well, I'm not uptight, not unattractive. Turn me on tonight, 'cause I'm really right now, really right now.
Radio or not, and SoFlo Radio present The Nicole Sandler Show.
Truth to power, baby.
And now, here's Nicole.
All right, we are back. Nicole Sandler here at RadioOrNot.com, SoFloRadio.com, TalkRadio1.com. You know the drill. I thank you for listening wherever and whenever you choose to do so. Today, as we mentioned, is the first anniversary of President Obama signing the Affordable Care Act, or as the Republicans like to call it, the job-killing health care bill. It is neither job-killing nor, at this point, really, I think, a health care bill, because we still have so many of the same problems that we had a year ago that haven't been addressed yet. I guess that will come with time if you can wait for another 3 years. Anyway, problems still abound. If you want to know some of the benefits of this health care law that is a year old today, follow Nancy Pelosi on Twitter, at Nancy Pelosi, and she is tweeting one benefit an hour. I guess we can assume that we'll get, I don't know if it's just until midnight, but we'll get about a dozen benefits, I guess, from Nancy Pelosi. Meanwhile, you know, the same old shit keeps going on. And right now, let's reach out. We're going to call Ed Blizzard. Now, you may not know his name, but if the media did its job, you would. Ed Blizzard is an attorney representing 15 plaintiffs right now who received a hip implant. In fact, we'll have Ed explain. Hi, Ed. It's Nicole Sandler calling again.
Hi, Nicole.
How are you doing today?
I'm great.
Good. Thanks for coming on today. I wanted to, our mutual friend, Cliff Schechter, alerted me to what you're doing. And these are the kind of things we need to talk about because while, you know, we have an FDA that's supposed to protect us before medical devices and drugs are allowed on the market, we learn that's not always the case. And you're an attorney. You're representing 15 people who received a hip implant made by a company called Dupuy Orthopedics.
It's pronounced Depew.
Depew. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Although sometimes I say Depuy.
But it is Pew. It really stinks. Depew Orthopedics, a subsidiary of Johnson & Johnson, by the way. Tell us a little bit about this suit. What happened to people who got this hip implant?
Well, this implant is what's called a metal-on-metal implant. That is, it has a ball that is metal that fits into a socket that is metal. And the ball is attached to the femur or thigh bone, and the cup sits on the hip bone. So unlike implants in the past that had a ceramic ball, this one had a metal ball articulating with a metal cup. And the problem is that the wear between the cup and the ball has caused metal debris to break off to cause the implant to fail. The problem is compounded by the fact that this metal debris, it doesn't just cause you to have a new implant, but you also have to, it causes destruction of bone and tissue, as well as distributes it through the bloodstream.
And the two metals that we're talking about are chromium and cobalt. Now, chromium is the poisonous properties of chromium were those made famous in the movie Aaron Brockovich. So
that's
right.
That's exactly correct. And cobalt is also a toxic material when it gets into the bloodstream.
Ah. Okay, so now our mutual friend Cliff Schechter forwarded me some press on this, and I read that as people were having the implants replaced, what the doctors were finding when they went into the hip area is liquefied black dead flesh surrounding the hip device, which was shredding shards of those toxic metals into the surrounding tissues, thus poisoning the body, right?
That's right. The tissue is dead and therefore black, and it looks like there's been an oil spill in the body.
Ugh. Now, you know, I'm looking at my chat room. I've got two chat rooms open during the show, and Castle B7, who lives down here in Florida, says she has a Depuy knee replacement and then said, no wonder why it feels like crap. Is this problem only in these hip implants,
well,
or...
Well, the hip implants are the only ones that have been recalled to date, and the recall occurred in August of 2010, so we don't know about the knees at this point.
Oh, my goodness. She might want to give you a call anyway. Someone else, Gardy just said, House just had a show on this where a patient had the bad hip replacement causing cobalt poisoning. So, obviously,
right.
if it's a big enough problem to make it into a mainstream medical show like that, now, obviously, it's a big problem. How many people got these hip implants? Do we know?
There are 93,000 hip implants that were subject to the recall.
Okay, so they recalled them. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. So what's the problem?
Well, the problem is that people really don't know at this point whether they have a failed hip implant or not. The ones that are producing pain, clearly that's evidence of failure, and so people would need to see a doctor about that. But what physicians have found when they've studied the problem is even those who are asymptomatic can have high levels of cobalt and chromium in their bloodstream, and that high level of chromium and cobalt is a predictor for the need for future surgery.
Wow. Okay. So one of the elements of the lawsuit is that Depuy knew that there were problems long before they started the recall. They kept implanting these devices into people even after they knew there were problems, right?
Nicole, that's exactly right. In 2010, August of 2010, they had the recall. But as early as 2007, there's indication that they knew that there was a problem and didn't tell physicians or the patients.
Wow. Now I read a piece in The Daily. I hate to admit it. That's Rupert Murdoch's new online newspaper, if you will. But it's a good story. I will link to it from my blog at RadioOrNot.com today, which talks about it. It opens the story with somebody coming out of surgery who wanted to know what the doctor found when he pulled out the defective implant or the bad DePue implant, and the doctor wouldn't tell him until he had already left the hospital and signed a release. What is that about?
Well, you know, often these physicians are advocates for these implants, and they have very close relationships with the implant manufacturers. Some of them are paid to speak on behalf of the manufacturer. So it's not uncommon for us as attorneys representing individuals who've been harmed by these implants to have difficulty extracting information from the physicians.
It's really sad because you know, the one person you should be able to trust is your doctor, but in many cases they are in cahoots with the pharmaceutical companies, and you don't know who you can trust anymore and who you can't trust.
Right. Yeah, and it's certainly not all doctors, but there are a substantial number of doctors who have these relationships with the manufacturers of medical devices. In fact, a number of them are involved in the actual design of new implants.
Wow. So Ed Blizzard is with us. You're an attorney based in Texas, but if there are people out there who are listening who perhaps have one of these DePue hip implants and are in whatever state, whether they're feeling pain or realize there's something wrong or maybe they've already had it replaced, are you putting together a class?
It's not really a class. We, although we have an office in Houston, that's our main office, mm-hmm. we have a nationwide practice, and we represent individuals everywhere. Those cases are consolidated for purposes of common discovery, but it's not really a class action in the classic sense.
I see. But if
we are taking, obviously, new cases, and we're seeing more and more of these hip implants having to be replaced.
I hear you. Now, let me ask you, because today happens to be the one-year anniversary of President Obama signing the health care bill into law. I haven't seen enough progress in the year. I hate that we still have to wait 3 years for everything to go into effect, the benefits. One of the things that the Republicans were pushing for, like it was going to make a difference, is tort reform. If they got their way, and tort reform had gone through, what would that do to the people who are suffering with this right now?
Well, Nicole, unfortunately, the FDA does not have adequate resources to police this industry. The industry just overwhelms them in terms of money spent as well as employees available to do the work. And so they just can't do it. And so the tort system does act as a check on the industry, because they know at the end of the day that if, in fact, they put a defective product on the market, that they may have to pay for it.
Right, as it should be. I mean, these people trusted in their doctors and in Johnson & Johnson and DePue to replace their hip with something that was going to make them feel better, not make them feel worse and perhaps be a carcinogen, which is what we're seeing. So so where do you go from here? Now, what is the way forward here? What happens next?
Well, what we're doing now is we're in the early stages of discovery. So we know from the public record that they knew early on and did nothing to warn physicians, and probably engaged in a cover-up of this information.
Wow.
But we're in the process of receiving the documents from them that we can then examine and get to the bottom of what they knew and when they knew it. And then also we're collecting information about our individual clients to see how bad they've been harmed by this. There's this uncertainty hanging over all of their heads about what has the chromium and cobalt done to them, and they probably won't know that for years.
Yeah.
But also we're looking at, you know, some of our clients are still having surgeries to have the implants taken out. I have several of them who have hip implants that are DePue hip implants on both sides,
oh,
and so they're
God.
Having to have surgeries over several years.
Oh, this is sickening. And is there any way to implore your doctor to tell you if they found this black, liquefied, dead flesh substance surrounding the implants, or do you have to subpoena them to get that information?
Well, you can get the medical records and see how they describe it in the operative reports, but, the doctor is going to control what's actually in the operative report. And most physicians, and I think there's a good reason for this, don't want to have some video or photographs taken inside the operating theater.
Wow. If somebody has a DePue hip implant or perhaps even a knee implant, because you never know what's going to surface next, should they get in touch with you?
I think so. I think we have done over the years an effective job for our clients in helping them navigate through this complex area.
All right. And so how would someone reach out to you?
Our phone number is 713-844-3750. I'm going to have to confess that I don't have our 800 number available.
Okay.
We do have an 800 number. And you can also find that number online at blizzardlaw.com.
Okay, blizzardlaw.com. I'll put all the information up on the blog at radioornot.com after the show today so people can find you. Thanks for doing this. You know, we are just, you know, the little people sort of at the mercy of Big Pharma and who, as we've learned, don't always have our best interest in mind. So, you know, it's important to get this information out there. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Nicole.
All right, take care. Ed Blizzard is his name. You know, it's sickening that, again, DePue, what a perfect name for a company who is hurting people rather than helping them. DePue, it looks like there's a cover-up. There was a cover-up. They knew that this the chromium and cobalt rubbing against each other was shaving off and poisoning people from inside their bodies, and they kept using these implants in people. Sickening. Disgusting. By the way, today, the one-year anniversary of the Affordable Care Act, David, my David, did a little research. And on in March of 2010, before the health care law was bill was signed into law, the stock price for United Healthcare was $33.16 a share. Any guesses on what it is today? I'm looking in the looking in the chat rooms to see if someone can come up with it. And WellPoint was $63.61 a year ago. You know what it is today? I don't have the Jeopardy music here handy. Dun 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 dun. No, not quite triple, Mike M. United Healthcare in the year since the health care bill was signed into law went from $33.16 a share to $42.64. WellPoint, $63.61 a share, now at $67.19 a share. But that doesn't account for the fact that they've raised their rates, you know? Yeah, so there you go. No, not quite triple, not even double, but still the share prices are steadily rising. Something is wrong. All right, we'll take another break. Still to come on the show today, a big one. As I mentioned, I need to leave a little early today. So for in the last half hour, we're going to do a flashback to a year ago today. I was a couple of months into the show being exclusively online because Air America had gone under the end of January. I was doing the show from 6 to 9 or 6 to 8 p.m. And the day the health care bill was signed into law, then Congressman Alan Grayson checked in with us. And you remember Alan Grayson? Well, he's the guy who came into the public spotlight by getting up on the floor of the House and saying, here's the Republican plan for health care. Don't get sick. Don't get sick. And if you do get sick, die quickly. That's the Republican plan. Guess what? It's still the Republican plan. So we will do a rewind in the last half hour of the show and listen back to my interview with Alan Grayson from a year ago today after the health care bill was signed into law. All right. But right now, let's take a break. Check in with Jim Hightower. Oh, and what else is coming up? Dennis Kucinich, Congressman Dennis Kucinich. A lot of controversy swirling around Congressman Kucinich because of his comments on President Obama's actions regarding Libya. I taped that with him last night. We will hear it after the top of the hour news with the Talk Radio News Service. Busy day today here on the Nicole Sandler Show, Radio or Not.
Hear why the new Tea Party Congress is coddling corporate power today on Hightower Radio. Change is not the same thing as progress. In fact, change can be the exact opposite. It can be regressive, as we're now learning from where else Congress. A flock of Tea Party-infused Republicans has certainly changed the political dynamic in Washington, and exultant GOP leaders are claiming that they are now the voice of the people. But most people won't find themselves represented by this change, much less see it as progress. That's because the newcomers in Congress, whether Republican or Democrats, tend to live high up the economic ladder, way out of touch with the people they're representing. Indeed, 40% of newly elected House members are millionaires, as are 60% of new senators. While the great majority of workaday Americans are struggling to make it on about $30,000 a year and having at best puny pensions and iffy health coverage, these incoming lawmakers tend to be sitting pretty on accumulated wealth. Their financial reports show them holding extensive personal investments in such outfits as Wall Street banks, oil giants, and drug makers. Their wealth and financial ties might help explain the rush by the new Republican House majority to coddle the corporate powers. From gutting EPA's anti-pollution restrictions on big oil to undoing the restraints on Wall Street greed, they're pushing for a return to the same laissez-faire land ideology of the past 20 years that got our country in massive messes. At the same time, they're out to kill the green jobs program, bust unions, cut Social Security, defund Head Start, and generally stomp on the fingers of working families trying to hold on to the middle-class rungs of that economic ladder. This is Jim Hightower saying, the change in Congress is taking America backwards, not forwards, for the new majority literally is the voice of millionaires, and that's not progress.
If you like these feisty pops of populism that Hightower zings out on the airwaves, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter provides the in-depth lowdown on what the greed heads of Wall Street and the boneheads of Washington are doing to us behind the scenes. With Hightower's saucy Texas humor and truth-telling populist perspective, the Lowdown literally can lift you up. And get this, you can have the Lowdown delivered to your mailbox or email each month for only $15 a year. Yes, 12 issues, only 15 bucks. Check it out.
March 25th, the biggest comic convention in Florida is back. MegaCon 2011. Join Lewis the Artist as he hosts the powwow live from Orlando's beautiful Orange County Convention Center, right in the entrance of Hall D. Lewis and his hosts of Super Friends bring you all the action live all weekend long. Join us March 25th through 27th live. And if you can't make it, no problem. You could always listen to it live on any mobile device, only on SoFloRadio.com.
Okay, listen. Somebody has got to get serious.
Well, I think that the sky's the limit on what we can gouge you for a gallon of gas. And long as we don't have any oversight or regulation, Wall Street can speculate all they want. And there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it.
You hear about alternatives, right? Wind, solar,
I think that'll work on a large scale, but it won't be any more affordable. The reality is, we're big oil, and what that means is, we can ram our fists so far up your ass we can tickle your tonsils. I mean, what are you going to do? Write an angry letter to President Jell-O?
We gotta get on this now.
Get on this, lady. At Chevron, our scientists are hard at work developing a mechanical dildo that rapes you as you bend over to fill the tank.
Chevron, gas prices high as the sky. You won't complain.
Hi everybody, this is Boca Brian once again to tell you about my latest CD of religious comedy bits, Word of Boca. All my smash hits made famous throughout the world. For the, well, not exactly the world. Let's see. Parts of Okeechobee down to, no, I'd say Hallandale. Well, like I was saying, the most requested religious comedy bits ever to be heard all over your radio for too short a time. You'll get such hits as,
my religion's better than yours.
You'll get
Father O'Toole, amen,
and this all-time Boca classic.
They were speaking in tongues that made me a believer.
Yes, it's Word of Boca, about 30 all-time certified aluminum religious hits by Boca Bryan, who sits on the middle finger of God while singing about men of the moist cloth. That's Word of Boca, available now at all Peaches Records and, order yours today by clicking on the album cover on SoFloRadio.com.
This is the Media Matters Minutes. I'm Tyrone Gale. Bill O'Reilly likes to see himself as an independent and often tries to paint himself as a moderate arbiter and Fox News as the fair and balanced network.
And this hypocrisy on the right as well. They make a great big deal out of this NCAA brackets business as if the president can't take 15 minutes out to do
that. That's just Obama bashing, pure and simple.
But conservative, exactly.
Yeah,
that's my point. But if George W. Bush had done the brackets, the talk show host on television and radio would have said, what's the
big deal? But
there's
an industry of Obama bashers.
And that industry includes Fox News.
He didn't support the freedom fighters in Iran in 2009. He vacillated and took varying positions in Egypt and seems to be doing the same here today, more concerned about brackets, trips to Rio, and playing golf.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Oh, boy. All right, here we go.
I read the news today, oh, boy.
It is time for the news. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service. Find them online at talkradionews.com. And here every morning, straight up 11 o'clock Eastern. Hi, who's on the line this morning?
Hey, it's Bob Ney. How are you, Nicole?
Oh, good. How are you, Bob?
Oh, just watching Libya, the banks, and the budgets.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. And the House, with all this going on, it's one of John Boehner's many, many weeks off.
Nicole, it is not a recess. It is a industry constituent work period.
Oh, give me a break.
Give me a break.
Congress should be in session. Here they are criticizing the president for actually doing work in Central and South America, but they're taking the week off. This is what John Boehner likes to do, go home and play golf and tan, I guess.
Well, you know, two terribly hypocritical things. One is the Congress saying, well, he shouldn't be, you know, or anybody saying he shouldn't be over there, and he's trying to help with jobs. The country continues. The second thing is Lindsey Graham, John McCain, and John Bolton. And John Bolton, you know, I used to tell my kids, if you misbehave, this is your babysitter. You know, it worked with the kids. He's so scary. Those three were 2 weeks ago saying, do the no-fly zone. And as soon as the president did it, they were, you know, screaming at him.
Right, they're criticizing him for that. Either he didn't act quickly enough, according to John McCain, or, I don't know, he's overstepping his boundaries. Look, I think he needed to go to Congress to ask, before he could do this. So I'm critical of him on this.
Yes.
But what the Republicans are criticizing him for is just nonsense. They're just criticizing him because he's a Democrat.
It's wrong. You know, I agree with you 100%. He should have learned from history with George Bush and went to the Congress. But, the big but, these people have no basis to stand on, urging him to do something, then attacking him to death for doing it. It's just wrong.
Exactly. And by the way, I have Dennis Kucinich coming up in just a few minutes.
Tell him I said hello. Well, I actually am calling his office today as a citizen to just say thanks for being Dennis. I think he's one of the most honest people in the U.S. House, bar none.
I agree with you. See, Dennis will stand up for principle. He'll stand on principle for what's right and not paying any attention to party lines. And I know, Bob Ney, you're an Ohio citizen. So, and Dennis is fighting for his public service life right now because due to the census and redistricting, his district is likely to be eliminated.
That's right. You know, I was asked today who I thought was one of the most people with integrity in Congress by one of the talk show hosts. And when I said Dennis Kucinich, I thought they were going to pass out. While he's so liberal, I said, you know what? Dennis he's an honest guy. What you see is what you get, and you got to respect him for it. If you know him, and I know him, three cheers for Dennis. Even if I disagreed with him, I would say three cheers for Dennis.
Absolutely.
Congressman, I should say.
You got it. Well, actually, I taped this with him last night, so I can't pass along your regards, but I'm sure he knows. Well, hopefully he'll hear this or his people will hear it. Anyway, all right, so let's move on. So what is the latest with Libya?
Well, with Libya, of course, they're now talking about the cost of $100 million a day, but we had a plane go down, as we all know now.
Yep.
And it's still a fluctuating policy of where we at. They say no boots on the ground, but there's some troops in readiness, which I guess you can say may go to Libya, may not. It's a speculation, but some of the troop readiness is out there. And it's just a continuing ongoing, you know, internal battle up on the hill with, you know, a lot of people turning on the president. There is a bright spot today. The Supreme Court yielded to the lower court in the banks, And for 2 years, the banks have fought the Fed Reserve, giving us data of what American citizens paid for with the banks. It's going to be released in 3 weeks. Ought to be very, very interesting. The banks have fought this for two solid years.
Wow. 2 years. Yep. All right. All right.
And John Boehner is putting together a comprehensive budget, which translates to Hill speak as the fact that he has corralled his caucus and they're in unison. They're going to present a 2011-2012 budget, lay it on the table, and see what Harry Reid says. So who knows?
Who knows is absolutely right. So, you know, I got to ask you this. Congress, uh-huh. in its last few days before they went back to their districts, they dealt with those really important issues of, like, defunding NPR, something based on just lies. From your time in the House, you had to have worked with John Boehner. Is he just stupid, or does he not pay attention, or does he not care? I mean, I really think the whole thing, that 60 Minutes story, when he cried he couldn't talk about kids, is because he knows he's sentencing them to a life of no opportunity. And that's why he can't talk about kids.
Well, I've known John Boehner forever. There's one thing to always remember. He wants to remain Speaker and therefore will do a juggling act within his conference of what they want as he counts the votes for his speakership versus any philosophical bent, frankly. And he's going to count the numbers, and, you know, he can make them angry. And if he makes them angry, they can throw him out. That's what this is going to be about.
Unbelievable. So didn't they all campaign on jobs, jobs, and jobs? And I have yet to see one piece of legislation to help create jobs.
Well, an erroneous thing in people's minds, I call it the God complex. They would get elected and say, I was sent here by a mandate. Therefore, everything I say and vote for now is supreme. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Americans may have voted for you. It doesn't mean everything you do after that is going to be welcomed.
Well, Americans also overwhelmingly voted for President Obama and the Democrats in 2008. Doesn't make, but I didn't see any Republicans say, well, this is what the American people wanted. Let's help the president out here to give them what they wanted.
Yeah, this is all in flux. Of course, I personally think that the president stands a very good chance on reelection, frankly. Mm-hmm. But it depends on how also he, you know, maneuvers between his philosophy and what he does in practicality up on the Hill. I think he could be in the driver's seat for some programs he wants if he takes that steering wheel.
I hear you. All right. The latest, there's more bad news coming out of Japan again today, where there was more black smoke seen billowing from the Fukushima plant. But everybody on this side, from the president on down, seems firm on saying we're sticking with our nuclear program going forward.
Well, also, there's some new scientific information on, and I'm not a scientist, but on seismic type of activities that could occur in California along the fault lines. That is regenerated today. But, no, I would say that the nuclear industry has gotten its way in the sense of people saying, well, you know, the powers to be, both sides of the aisle saying, ah, let's not wipe all this out now. They better take some really good, hard scientific looks at it. I mean, I'd like to see get off of our thirst for gasoline. But you sure don't want something built that's going to be, you know, under the same type of problems that Japan has.
I hear you. All right. Anything else going on today we need to know about?
No, that was about it. Just the budget unveiling, and the members are back, and maybe, I don't know, maybe Speaker Boehner stayed off the golf course, you think?
No, I don't think. I think that's exactly what he did. And I think it's time that people know the truth about him.
And the good news, President Obama did get some arrangements out of South America for, you know, buying of some of our products. So I think the trip was successful.
Well, you know, he was there on a jobs mission to try to create jobs, because I guess Brazil is one of the biggest importers of American goods, whatever we still export. And, you know, this was a trip planned for a long time. And it's not like he can't, you know, take care of business from wherever he is. I guess all the Republicans that are criticizing him just want to criticize him, for not doing the political theater that they're so good at?
Yeah, he needed to do this. Life must continue on, and I think it was a good thing.
Yep.
He went.
All right. Bob Nay from Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye. All right. I promised you we will be hearing from Dennis Kucinich, and we'll do that in just a moment. Let's get one more quick check-in with Jim Hightower, and back with Congressman Dennis Kucinich talking about Libya next.
Why would the mugshots of bank robbers show them smiling? I'll tell you today on Hightower Radio. The popular perception is that bank robbers wear ski masks when doing their jobs. But a lot of modern-day bank robbers are wearing Armani suits and Gucci loafers. The New York Times recently ran a story on such hold-up men, including showing mugshots of five who've been making big hauls. The photos looked as though they were taken at a police lineup, except for one significant difference. All five of these robbers had big smiles on their faces. That's because they are the chief executives of some of America's biggest banks, and they've just pulled off a major job that'll put more sacks of riches in their private stashes. These inside men were involved in the bank crash of 2008 and 2009 that resulted in, one, them engineering multi-billion dollar bailouts of their failed financial empires by us taxpayers. Two, them being allowed to skate free of any punishment, keeping their prestigious positions rather than being fired or going to jail. Three, them returning almost immediately to the same old speculative banking capers that caused the crash, rather than being compelled to invest our bailout funds in job-creating businesses. And four, them continuing to make off with fat salaries and bonuses. Now, the Federal Reserve is allowing these heisters to raise the value of their bank's stock dividends. Since the CEOs happen to be among the biggest stockholders, the dividend hike will be a windfall for them. For example, Jamie Dimon, the boss banker of J.P. Morgan Chase, was a major backroom plotter in the bailout scheme, and his bank took $25 billion from us. Far from being punished, last year he hauled off $18.4 million in personal pay. And now he's set to grab another $6 million from the dividend heist. This is Jim Hightower saying, shouldn't these guys at least have to wear ski masks when they go to work? Maybe they can get one from Gucci.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org or call 1-866-271-4900.
Buy the best custom full-color balloons with your photo, logo, or design that will blow your next party or event away with PhotoBalloonStore.com. Take a look for yourself and see why PhotoBalloonStore.com is the place for full-color, custom-printed photo balloons. Our balloons are not made out of rubber, latex, or mylar. They're made from a durable aluminum foil composite film that keeps them inflated longer than any other balloon sold. 11 inches in diameter uninflated, 9.5 inches inflated. These balloons can be reinflated over and over again. Cheer on your Miami Heat basketball team at home or the arena with our version of the Miami Heat Dream Team balloon. These limited edition memorabilia balloons are available for only $6.95 for a limited time. Visit PhotoBalloonStore.com for more. Order yours today. We deliver on time and fast. PhotoBalloonStore.com.
Radio or not, and SoFlo Radio present The Nicole Sandler Show.
Truth to power, baby.
And now, here's Nicole.
We are back. Nicole Sandler here at RadioOrNot.com. And Dennis Kucinich ran for the presidency back in 2008. And the most, the thing that didn't get talked about enough, really, was Dennis's calls for a Department of Peace. Forget about Department of Defense. It is not a Department of Defense. It's a Department of War. And Dennis likes to see would rather see a peaceful world, as would I. Well, now Denis Kucinich is, you know, he's not playing party politics. He is, as believe it or not, you just heard Bob Ney, of all people, say it. Denis Kucinich has integrity. He stands up for what is right and for what he believes in, and that is peace. I made a call to get Denis on the show. He couldn't do it today, but he did have a few minutes for me last night. And so when he called, I just jumped right into it. We're in a no-win situation, aren't we? I mean, it's almost you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. You have called for, you're going to introduce a resolution to defund the action in Libya?
To cut off funds.
Now, there were never funds allotted for this. So how do you go about cutting off funds for it?
The way it works is that it's a prohibition on spending any money for the Libyan intervention, and therefore they wouldn't have the funds to go forward.
Can we back up a second here? This sort of took us all by surprise. Can I ask how you found out that we were going to be dropping bombs on Libya this weekend?
Through the media.
Wow. Through the media. Now, the president says that he consulted with leaders of both parties. Do you know what happened there?
Well, it doesn't really matter because the Constitution requires that he not simply consult with Congress, but that Congress has to approve any action that takes the United States to war.
Right. Now, I know a lot of people are saying, well, it hasn't been done. I mean, we've been in undeclared wars. Every war, really, since World War II has been an undeclared war. And what I tell my 11-year-old daughter, just because some kid across the street does something doesn't mean it's okay for you to do it. Is this sort of the situation we're in? We thought we were getting change.
It's outside the Constitution. And when President Obama, who absolutely knows better because he himself, as a constitutional scholar, was quoted in the Boston Globe on the 20th of December 2007, that a president would not have the authority to go unilaterally to war and that he had to come to Congress. So President Obama knows better. And it's really a very dangerous state of affairs because we have the Congress of the United States, which are the directly elected representatives of the people, not having anything to say with their constitutionally bound duty to determine whether or not we go to war.
Now, Congress is on recess this week, a planned, I don't even know what John Boehner calls it, but one of the many planned weeks off. Why hasn't John Boehner reconvened the House to take this up?
I asked the Speaker to call Congress back. I don't know why he hasn't, but that request was made.
Mm-hmm. And, they're all out there criticizing this action, yet they spent valuable days last week, to attack Planned Parenthood and defund NPR and didn't even talk about this impending quagmire in Libya. When are you planning on introducing your resolution to defund this?
As soon as Congress comes back and we have a debate and time is set for the debate with respect to the appropriations bill, I will have the amendment ready, present it to the Rules Committee, and prepare it, hopefully, for presentation to the House of Representatives. I'm right now working to gain co-sponsors for the amendment, and I think that we should be able to get quite a few because Congress was definitely not consulted with. There are huge costs here, $100 million a day. Our military is stretched quite thin. We have the president's gone around the Constitution. This decision was not made in Washington by the Congress. It was made by the president in concert with the UN, NATO, the Arab League, Great Britain, France, but not the Congress.
Unbelievable. Congressman Denis Kucinich, I always appreciate you standing up for what's right. And as do, I know, many of my listeners, although in the past couple of days or the past 24 hours, you've taken some heat from people on the left for saying that this is an impeachable offense. I appreciate the fact that you don't care what party it's coming from. You're standing up for what's right. And
well, Nicole, what I said was I raised a question in a conversation with other Democrats, and the question was, if a president takes the U.S. Armed Forces into a war without congressional approval, is that an impeachable offense?
Mm-hmm.
Now, no one answered my question. Now, I did not make a flat declarative statement that president should be impeached. But if we don't raise the questions about what the limitations are of presidential power, we fail in our duty to uphold the Constitution. And so I ask that question in the context of how far can a president go here? And frankly, this president has moved in a manner that is not consistent with the Constitution of the United States, and that's what I've pointed out, and I'll continue to point out.
Well, thank you for doing that. I got some comments this morning or yesterday morning on my show from people saying, "Oh, and Dennis Kucinich, you know, he criticizes the president for doing this, and then he turns around and makes it into a fundraising appeal." I pointed out that any member of Congress who plans on running for re-election, every communication from your office is a fundraising appeal. But you're up in a really in a very strange position in that due to the new census numbers and the gerrymandering in Ohio, your district is likely going to be eliminated. So you've got an even tougher battle to face.
Well, I haven't made many of those appeals. But when you make an appeal, you can't not make an appeal because the country is being taken into an illegal war. I'm certainly going to continue my efforts to stay in Congress. And people should know that there is someone who is willing to challenge even the president of his own party in order to uphold the Constitution and in order to take a stand for peace. And, you know, I have been very supportive of President Obama. But this action and going into Libya without checking with Congress first is a very grave move on his part, and it cannot be overstated that it is imperative that any president who wants to take this country into a war follow the Constitution, and Barack Obama has not done that.
I agree with you. But let me, and I agree with everything that you've said and done in the past couple of days as this has all unfolded. But let me ask you this question. What should we do? Do we have any responsibility to the people of Libya? And, you know, to that matter, to the people of Sudan and to the people of Bahrain? I mean,
and to the people of Yemen, the people of Cote d'Ivoire, and the people in every nation where they have governments that are oppressive,
exactly,
tyrannical, and murderous. America has its limitations, and this is where we're in a new debate. There are those who think that America should go wherever it needs to in order to go after dictators and people who are killing their own citizens. If we are about that, then we will not have public education in America because we're spending it all for war. We'll not have Medicare because we'll spend all the money for war. We won't even have Social Security because all the money will be spent for war. We have to ask, is our fundamental purpose of our nationhood to provide for the common defense of the people of the United States, or is it to provide for the defense of people all around the world? This is a moment when we have to away our compassionate instincts with our resources. We have a finite number of resources, and I'm all for democracy. We have to protect it here at home. And the more that we go abroad seeking dragons to slay, the less capable we will be to deal with the dragons of unemployment, of poverty, of homelessness, of lack of education, of poor health care, of unstable retirement security. You know, we have to take care of things here at home in order to be a proper exemplar of liberty and democratic principles abroad.
I hear you. I've been saying, look, I understand there's a humanitarian crisis in Libya. There are humanitarian crises around the world, including right here at home, where we've got this growing group of people known as the 99ers, who are long-term unemployed, who have exhausted all their benefits, and they are literally out of luck. Many of them are thrown out of their homes. They can't house, feed, clothe their families. We need to take care of things here at home. We don't, if we're as broke as the Republicans keep telling us we are, how can we justify, something just crossed my Twitter feed, 5 years of NPR funding done in an hour in Libya right now? That is inhumane, the way we are ignoring the people here at home. And I think it's all about oil. Dennis Kucinich, I so appreciate you standing up for what's right and speaking out, even when it is against your own party, even when you are angering some people, you know, on this side of the aisle. You're saying the things that need to be said, and I thank you for it.
Well, thank you very much, Nicole, and let's talk again.
I hope so. Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye. Congressman Dennis Kucinich, again, recorded that conversation last night. Again, you may not like everything Dennis Kucinich does and says, but the thing is, he stands on principle. He's got integrity, and I would say, easily say, more than any other member of the House of Representatives, Dennis Kucinich has integrity. And, he wants, peace. Wow. Only to have other people in Congress who wanted peace. The man speaks truth to power. All right. Still to come, today is the first anniversary of the passage of the Affordable Care Act. And the good parts of it are not coming into effect fast enough for me or for anybody. But 1 year ago today, when after the bill was signed into law, I was still doing my show at night, and then Congressman Alan Grayson joined me on the air that night, and we're going to re-listen to that. We're going to do a sort of a flashback thing to a year ago, because I've got to run out. I've got to leave and go to a doctor's appointment. No, not dealing with the tooth. Never fear. I have to leave early, but you don't have to. Let me, though, tell you what's going on tomorrow. And if you're in South Florida, I'm hoping you can join me on Friday evening. As I think you know, I have spent my entire adult life in radio. My career has been in radio, and radio jobs are harder and harder to find because there are just as many radio stations as there used to be. But the jobs are fewer because of consolidation. I'll never forget. It was the very early 90s. I was living in Los Angeles, and I used to get, I was a member of the union. I sort of still am. I'm a member of AFTRA, and thank goodness I have an AFTRA pension coming to me because of 15 years of working under the auspices of AFTRA in Los Angeles. Thank God. Now I live in Florida. Florida is a so-called right-to-work state. So I'm on honorable withdrawal from AFTRA, but I will still get my pension. But the jobs, I remember getting a notice from AFTRA saying if this Telecommunications Act goes through, we're going to have such consolidation where one company will own hundreds, if not thousands, of radio stations, and there will be fewer jobs. And I'm like, this is all alarmist, Well, everything they said came true. And now Clear Channel owns in the neighborhood of 1,200 radio stations, followed very closely by CBS. Cumulus is about to take over Citadel. The jobs are much fewer. It used to be one program director per station and a personality on every show. Well, now, of course, in talk radio, there's the rise of syndication. Many stations have no local air talent at all. In many markets, it's one program director per cluster. It used to be one company could own one AM, one FM, and one TV station in a market with a cap of like, I don't remember what the number was, but it was like seven total. Now they can have seven, they can have eight radio stations in a market and one program director overseeing them all. And in some cases, not a single local personality among them. I mean, it's really sickening what's happened. Well, last year I have, this is interesting. Sorry, I'll get back to it in a second. Quick breaking news. Jason Leopold just tweeted that a senior defense official, senior defense official says Tomahawk missile attack portion of Libya mission has ended. All right. Well, from Jason Leopold, he wouldn't tweet it if it wasn't true. BBC World is saying Gaddafi's air force is defeated. What else? Libyan air force no longer exists as a fighting force, says RAF commander. That from BBC breaking news. Well, let's see. All right. So I just had to break in and say that. All right. So back to it. So last year at Netroots Nation in Las Vegas, I met Sue Wilson. And Sue Wilson was just railing about what has happened to radio in this country. And she was producing a film called Broadcast Blues. She's actually the writer, producer, and director of this documentary. It is now out. I'm holding the DVD in my hand. Sue Wilson is touring Florida with the film this week. So I will post all the information on my blog at radioornot.com later today. I will be with Sue Friday evening. I believe it's at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Fort Lauderdale, where we'll be screening the film. I'll be introducing her and the film, and then there'll be a Q&A session afterwards. If you are in South Florida, I hope you will come out and join us. And again, I don't have all the details in front of me, but I will have all the information on my blog at radioornot.com after the show. And Sue is going to join me on the show tomorrow morning. So we'll have all the details then. But again, if you're in South Florida, I hope you'll come out and join me there. And especially if you're in South Florida, you know what we're facing. You remember just a few minutes ago that a couple of years ago, I was doing a morning show at the then Progressive Talk Station here in South Florida, a station owned by Clear Channel, which has since flipped and is now at the fourth or fifth sports station in South Florida. So, you know, thus the reason I do my show online. There is nowhere for me to go, especially down here. But even, if I were to expand my search and say, all right, I'll go anywhere in the country, well, to any of those states that I could bear to live in, there are just not enough progressive talk stations. We are outnumbered 9-1 by right-wing talk radio. And Sue Wilson does such a great job in this film, Broadcast Blues, of explaining why we're in this predicament. And again, I'll tell you, it is necessary to keep the internet free and open, even though we're fighting against the tide on this, to retain the ability so I can do my show online, right? Because if the internet goes the way it looks like it's going, I likely will not be able to afford to keep doing this show. So tomorrow morning, join in. Sue Wilson will be with us in the first hour. I think we will have John Fugelsang in the second hour. I'm always, I know he's out of town. I'm not sure, but whatever. Believe me, there has been no shortage of things to talk about in recent days and weeks and months. Anyway, I told you I'm going to, I need to run out. I've got a doctor's appointment. So what we're going to do now for the next 25 minutes or so is go into the Wayback Machine. A year ago today, the Affordable Care Act was signed into law. I had just started moving my show online after Air America went under in January, and started the show and was waiting for a phone call. The phone had just rung, and I answered it, and we pick up there. It is March 23rd, 2010. I'm Nicole Sandler, Radio or Not, and who's on the line? All right, let me answer the phone because I think we got a special guest on the line. Hey, it's Nicole at Radio or Not. Who's this?
I don't know. Let me check my driver's license. It's Alan Grayson calling.
It is so great to hear from you tonight. And we are live on, well, on the net these days. So, you know, since the last time we spoke, I don't think I've spoken to you since Air America went down.
Actually, it was that day, January
21st. It was that day.
I was on with you, yeah.
Moments after I got the news, too. So that's right, how quickly I forget. But we've kept the show going, and the listeners are involved. And, you know, this is what we do. We keep talking. We keep fighting the good fight, as you do so beautifully. And Congressman Alan Grayson, again, I've got to thank you for your tireless work on behalf of all of us. You know, you're the guy who stood up in Congress and made all of America take notice when you brought us the Republican health care plan. You know, it's what brought you, you made your name a household name, especially for, you know, for people on the progressive side who've been longing for a congressman with guts. And, you know, I'm toning down my words, unlike our vice president today. How'd you like that?
I didn't hear what he said.
After,
what did he say?
Well, he really didn't hear. After he introduced President Obama up to the podium to announce, you know, right before the signing ceremony, and he whispered to him, "This is a big effing deal." But he didn't say effing. He said the word. He didn't say fracking either. You really didn't hear this yet?
No, I didn't hear it. That's interesting. He's a good man. He was very nice to my son. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, really?
You can tell a lot about people by the way they treat children.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came to Orlando to do an event for us, I have five children. The middle one is 9 years old. He's a boy. And he was so, so kind to him. We have a picture of the vice president and my nine-year-old on our refrigerator. And I can honestly tell you that Vice President Biden is more popular in my household than I am. And often makes more frequent appearances than I do, especially this week. I missed four birthdays this week.
Oh, well, I guess
including
that...
Including my wife's 50th.
Oh, boy. I just had my 50th, so that's a big one. But I'm sure she forgives you because she knows the important work you're doing, right?
You know, there's no question about that. I replaced somebody who was a rubber stamp for George Bush, and he was a four-term Republican incumbent. And every time I vote, I just have to ask myself, how would Rick Keller vote? And I just vote the opposite way.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it really easy for me to decide. So I do really feel that my vote makes a difference in a very literal sense. But it's, you know, even though we're bringing health care to 30 million Americans, you're talking about comparing things that are basically incommensurable. I've missed so much of the lives of my twins who had their fifth birthday this week.
Oh.
I've missed so much in the life of my 15-year-old, my oldest one. She turned 15 the day we voted on health care.
Wow.
So it's a sort of a bittersweet thing for me personally, but I know that the country is better off.
Well, the country is certainly better off, and we are better off because you're in Congress, and you know, and it makes it all the more, you know, that we should be thanking you even more, knowing the personal sacrifices you're making, and knowing that you're up for a tough reelection bid in November. Although the recent poll numbers are quite encouraging, in that you actually poll better in your district, which is Ocala in Orlando, and I'm here in South Florida, historically Republican seat. You actually poll better than any of the Republicans who are all in a primary fight to run against you, aren't you?
It's not really me against them. you're talking about as a group. There's 12 of them
running
against me.
Right.
As a group, you're not talking about the first stringers or the second stringers or, you know, even the farm team. This is like the little league. But that's not the way it is. It's actually just me against Goldman Sachs. I'm on the Financial Services Committee, and I've really stirred things up. I opposed the bailouts vehemently, and I have been trying to make sure that people's money didn't get transferred to the richest people in the country on Wall Street when so many ordinary people were in such great need. I've tried really hard to throw my body in the way when Wall Street tried to steal from all of us. And that's what it's really going to come down to this November. They can put up anybody they want from the other side, but really what it really amounts to is, are we going to have somebody who's there to do what's right for the people, or is Wall Street just going to get rid of me?
And, and we need to do what we can to ensure that Wall Street doesn't have a chance to do so. So this Saturday, you are once again, there's a money bomb. And I mentioned a congressman with guts, which you are, and there's a website, congressmanwithguts.com is the place to go. And, I know people from all over the country have been supporting you. And we do that because we appreciate the support you've given us. I mean, Congressman Grayson, seriously, until you got on the floor of the House that day and told us about the Republican health care plan, don't get sick, and if you do get sick, die quickly, we lamented the fact that there was not any member of on the Democratic side, with a few very rare exceptions, that had the testicular fortitude to stand up and speak out and use political theater, but really be ballsy and say what you felt. And I think you've, you opened the door to show your fellow Democrats that it's okay to do so.
The other side, they hit back so hard. I mean, it's very easy for someone who's here on the Democratic side to be intimidated because you've got Fox News and the enormous resources of corporate America battering you the minute you open your mouth. Look what happened when I did that. The Republicans en masse insisted that I apologize for hurting their feelings.
Yeah.
And I went on the floor and I apologized to the dead, to the people in this country who lost their lives because they had no health care. And then we actually started a website called namesofthedead.com because even after I pointed out on the floor of the House that according to a Harvard study, 44,000 Americans die each year because they have no health care. For that reason, because they have no health care, still the denialists on the other side were saying, oh, that's not true. Harvard's just making that up. So we actually had to create a website and put it right in their faces at the namesofthedead.com. The story is incredibly vivid, moving stories of people who lost the ones who they loved because those people had no health care. And finally, at that point, they started to shut up. They keep manufacturing their plausible lies over and over again until you finally fight back to the point where they just realize that they look foolish, and then they shut up.
Yeah.
Because they've got nothing to say. They've got no answers for anybody. You know, what's their answer to joblessness? Republican policy on joblessness, get a job.
Yeah.
What's their answer on homelessness? Move in with your parents. You know, these are people who never want to actually help you solve any of your problems. All they really want to do is they just want to blame you for your problems. You know, if you got AIDS, well, you really shouldn't have been doing whatever you did that got you AIDS. That's
it's
the Republican
fault.
View of
right.
things. Or even worse than that, they want to mess with your mind. They've done so successfully with Fox News, they want to convince you that actually getting the help you need leaves you somehow worse off.
Yeah.
That it's somehow degrading to you as a person if you're homeless and somebody reaches out to help you. Why aren't you lifting yourself up by your own bootstraps? Why is the invisible hand moving your life forward? You know, they just play this con game on people, this five-card Monty game on people to make them believe that they're better off if they're worse off, and they're worse off if they're better off.
And it's you know, and the few congressmen like you who have the guts to stand up and tell the truth that we're finally turning the rhetoric around. And so Congressman Alan Grayson, just one of many reasons why I appreciate you. Now, I started the show saying, yes, it's a great day. Health care reform is law. Now, but it doesn't go as far as we want it to, but I bless you again, because you've already introduced the Medicare You Can Buy Into Act.
Right, H.R. 4789. That's right.
And tell us a little bit about where we are on that and what it entails.
Well, amazingly, we got 80 co-sponsors for this bill in 1 week.
Wow.
The 90% of all the bills that are introduced in the House never get 80 co-sponsors, even in 2 years, which is the time limit for this sort of thing. And we got 80 co-sponsors in 1 week. A lot of other members tell me, too, that they're going to join the bill as soon as we're done with the voting. We're not quite done with the voting necessarily on health care, and they're going to join in because their sense was that it was one thing at a time. But we've also gotten a huge number of citizen co-sponsors, people who've gone onto our website, wewantmedicare.com, and they've signed our petition to say that anybody should be able to buy into Medicare. This is not a public subsidy program. We just went over 50,000, by the way, 50,000 signatures just in the past hour. Basically, this is saying if you want it and you pay for it, it's yours. You get the same coverage as anybody else on Medicare. Certainly, that's the American way. If you want it and you pay for it, it's yours. We let private insurers compete against Medicare in the Medicare Advantage program. We don't let Medicare compete against private insurers for 7/8 of the American market. And the most expensive part of any kind of network to provide health care to people is signing up hospitals, nurses, doctors, specialists, blood testing companies, every kind of contract that you need to sign before you start serving the first person. We've got a network that stretches all the way from Key West in Florida to Nome, Alaska, called the Medicare Network, the only national provider network in existence, and we limit it to 1/8 of the population. It's like saying only senior citizens can drive on the federal highways. They have this incredibly valuable resource that we paid billions of dollars to put together called the Medicare Provider Network, and we just need to open it up to everybody who's willing to pay for it. It's that simple. We need to do that to provide competition to the rip-off private insurance companies who make money by denying you care that you need for your health or even for your life.
Absolutely. And that is so what we need. So thank you for introducing this and following through on it. Do we know if anyone, I understand they want to get the reconciliation bill to fix the problems in the Senate bill that you guys passed and that the president signed into law today, and that's got to get done. But I know we have your pledge that you're going to keep going on this. Do we have anyone in the Senate? I know Bernie Sanders said he was going to introduce a public option bill. But is there anybody who's going to do this?
Well, we have 41 senators who signed a letter saying
yeah.
that they wanted to see the public option in the reconciliation bill, and at least now we know who our friends are.
Right.
But there will be all sorts of opportunities that come up all the time. We can try to attach this to any bill that floats through the House. And when there is another reconciliation bill, we're allowed one more reconciliation bill in this Congress. When there's another reconciliation bill, I have to hope that they'll think about putting this in so we can get over these Republican stalling tactics and give the people what they want. I have yet to hear anybody come up with a coherent argument against this. Why wouldn't you let people buy into Medicare at their own cost? Why wouldn't you do that? Of course, the only people who wouldn't benefit from it are the insurance companies, because they'd finally at long last start to see some competition.
That's right. Well, that's why we need to keep the heat on. Congressman Alan Grayson is with us. I got to ask you two more real quick questions. In January, you were on Hardball with Chris Matthews. In fact, I played the entire exchange last night. But basically,
yeah.
Chris Matthews was just, you know, thank you for standing up to him. He was just trying to put you in a corner and say, we can't do this through reconciliation. This doesn't get done. So has he called you to apologize yet?
No, but he has invited me on the show, and
really?
We'll see what happens on the show. His office called yesterday to tell us after the vote that they called us and said they'd like to have me back on the show, and I assume that's why they want to have me back on the show. And, I could sort of see his point because, we're talking about a matter of congressional procedure. I'm a congressman. He reads words from a teleprompter, so logically, who would know more about it than you or him?
I love that. So is there a date yet for your appearance?
No, there isn't a date. There isn't a date. I really feel like I was just like sort of in the wrong place at the wrong time. It's clear that night that he just wanted to really interview himself.
Yes.
So it was like sort of like a drive-by shooting. I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, he does that. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye out, and I'll let everyone know because, we did relive that five-minute piece last night and just said that Tweety owes you an apology. The other question I want to ask you about is ACORN. You had voted, along with other colleagues, to defund ACORN.
No, I know, but I had asked you about it. We changed that around.
Okay. Tell us, because I had asked you about it.
Here's what happened. Okay. That was a very interesting thing that happened. The Republicans prepared a last-minute amendment they dropped on the Democrats on the floor. And the way this works is that we get only 10 minutes to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked like they spent only 5 minutes writing it.
Right.
And it was like this incredibly bizarre wording. And if you took it literally, what it meant was that you don't defund ACORN. You defund essentially everyone who ever cheats the government to any degree at all. Not to say that ACORN ever did that, but this is the wording of the bill. And that's been something we needed for a long time. We didn't need to defund ACORN. We needed to defund the crooks. I mean, Blackwater has already been found guilty of this, that, and the other thing, including murder, and yet they still get government contracts left and right. So the Republicans inadvertently, by trying to go after ACORN and throwing this piece of garbage on the floor, they inadvertently almost defunded the entire military-industrial complex. And when I read that, I said, wow, I could see some possibilities here. And so what I did was, when it passed, I waited until the last day for inserting at what's called legislative history in the record, where we explain what the bill means. And I put in the only explanation of that bill, the only surviving legislative history on that bill, to say what this bill means is not that we're defunding ACORN, we're defunding Blackwater, we're defunding Halliburton, we're defunding General Dynamics,
mm-hmm.
we're defunding all these other companies that have been found guilty time after time after time. Do you know every single one of the 10 largest defense contractors has been found guilty of a felony? Every single one of them?
But they're still
and under
operating.
That bill, every one of them would have been out of business.
Right.
That's why I thought that bill was important. And we'll continue to look for opportunities like that. And, you know, obviously they didn't intend to defund the military-industrial complex. I look forward, you know, to what schemes they might come up with to inadvertently end world hunger.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the Republicans will come up with a bill that will accidentally bring about world peace.
The only way they do it is purely by mistake. Yeah, the sad thing is, though, is that Blackwater is still out there operating, and ACORN has announced they're going to be shutting down all their operations.
Well, remember, they did at least have to change their name to Z. That's some sign of progress. Blackwater becomes such a black name that they have to change it to something else.
That is true.
I'm not going to lay off of them. And it's unfortunate with the Supreme Court decision, they can drop $5 million of negative advertising on the Blackwater I'm talking about.
Yep.
And they don't even have to explain where it's coming from. They don't have any disclosure requirements. They don't have any reporting requirements. Literally, they can drop this on me and nobody will even know who's running the ads the last week of the election. That's why we're trying so hard to raise enough money so that we could at least try to fight back at the website congresswithguts.com. And that's the money bomb event that we're holding this week. We're asking people to go to the website and make pledges. Howard Dean today issued a video online in which he said this is really important. People have to do this. Talking about the former head of the Democratic Party, the conscience of the Democratic Party, telling people this is what you got to do. Go to this website, congresswithguts.com, and make this contribution. This is really important.
And it is posted there. And the money bomb is set for this Saturday. So far, over 1,500 people have pledged. And you're really all about doing this with small donations from people instead of our broken campaign financing system through lobbyists and special interests. And you're going for real people power, right?
We have the largest number of individual donors in the House of Representatives, and I'm a first-term congressman.
It is, well, it's well-deserved. Congressman Alan Grayson, on behalf of my listeners who are all, I'm looking at the chat room now, and you've got donations coming in from people, you know, we're in Florida, but they're out in California and around the country, and they're going to go to congressmanwithguts.com and contribute because we need Alan Grayson in Congress. And, again, every member of the House of Representatives comes up every 2 years. So, Congressman Alan Grayson, thank you for your hard work and for standing up.
And I wish you all the success that you really deserve. You are a voice of truth on the air and part of a movement that will inevitably succeed because we have a better understanding of human nature than the other side does. The other side believes that we're just atoms bouncing off each other in the void, And we know that people have hearts, not just heads, but hearts. And that's the way your show communicates with people every day.
Well, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. And I hope to meet you in person one of these days.
Same here. And please remember to mention, if you can, our effort again this week. It's between now and Saturday.
You got it. And I will post it on my blog, and I will promote it often because we need you in Congress.
Okay.
Alan Grayson.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, congressmanwithguts.com. And when you're done there, go to wewantmedicare.com. You know, and we didn't even get into the facts. He brought up the Citizens United ruling and how Z or Blackwater or whatever they want to call themselves, you know, who before Alan Grayson got into Congress, you know, he was an attorney who specialized in shutting down these military contractors. I mean, that's who he went after in the private sector. He didn't need to run for Congress. I mean, this is a guy who did very well in the private world, you know. And you heard the toll this is taking on his family life. He's doing this because he said it about me. How flattered am I? Because his heart is in the right place. He's in this for the right reasons. So we do need a fighter like him in the Senate, you know. I see some people in the chat writing Grayson for Senate. You have no idea how much I wish Alan Grayson were running for Senate because I live in Florida. Alan Grayson, actually my sister lives in his district in Ocala, Florida, my older sister. And she doesn't even, you know, she's not politically involved. She does not even realize how good she has it. The funny thing is my congressman down here in South Florida is Kendrick Meek. Now, Kendrick Meek is running for the Senate. He is running, and he's got, he does have a couple of other challengers on the Democratic side, but nobody's serious. His one serious opponent, Dan Gelber, dropped out of the race and is now running for Attorney General. I hope he wins. But that leaves us with Kendrick Meek as really the lone contender for the Democratic nomination for the Senate seat, who will run against Marco Rubio or Charlie Crist. Talk about the worst of all worlds. So, yes, I wish we had Alan Grayson. But as Hummingbird just wrote in the chat room, Bill Nelson needs to go. He certainly does. But somehow I don't think Alan Grayson would primary him. I wish he had appeared on the scene. You know, he is a first-termer. Alan Grayson is making this much noise as a freshman member of the U.S. House of Representatives. Can you imagine when he's in there for a while? So, again, the money bomb is happening this week. You know, they're trying to get all the money to post on Saturday, but you can go there now and pledge. CongressmanWithGuts.com. He certainly is one. And how lucky are we? All right, it's so funny. You can tell he's been working hard and been busy all day because he hadn't heard about the Joe Biden comment. How funny is this? I have been, you know, I have not been that supportive of President Obama. I have been disappointed in him, and today my appreciation of him went up quite a few notches. Yep. And, you know, I got to give him credit where credit is due. And I always promised you I would do that. I want to be proven wrong about Obama, and I think today was a step in that direction. So when Joe Biden stepped up to him, he did the intro. Here's a little piece of Joe Biden's intro to President Obama in the East Wing Room or the East Room of the White House.
Ladies and gentlemen, to state the obvious, this is a historic day.
Yes,
in
it
our
is.
Business, we use that phrase a lot. But I can't think of a day in the 37 years that I've been a United States senator in the short time I've been vice president that it is more appropriately stated this is a historic day. And history is not merely what is printed in textbooks. It doesn't begin or end with the stroke of a pen. History is made. History is made when men and women decide that there is a greater risk in accepting a situation that we cannot bear than in steeling our spine and embracing the promise of change. That's when history is made.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of Joe Biden's speech introducing the president. Then he introduces the president, who walks up to the podium. And I guess Joe thought he was far enough off mic, and he whispered in the president's ear, "This is a big fucking deal." And I saw Obama's face, and it was kind of like a, it just like, all right, that's Joe. And there's our flashback. Yes, going back to March 23rd, 2010, the day the Affordable Care Act was signed into law. A year later, well, not a whole lot to show for it, because many of the provisions still haven't gone into effect, although some have. And, of course, you got the Republicans trying to block funding to implement the rest of it. The more things change, the more they stay the same, eh? All right, well, that is going to do it for us for today. As always, I am Nicole Sandler. I thank you profusely for joining us. Tomorrow on the show, we'll delve into the world of talk radio. Yeah, why is it dominated by the right? Sue Wilson will join us, the woman behind the documentary Broadcast Blues, which is going to be shown throughout Florida over the next week. All the details tomorrow and on my blog at radioornot.com. As always, thank you for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow, Radio or Not.